Welcome, coaches and fellow split talkers. Thanks for joining us again on the Talking Split podcast. It is great to have you listening in on your mobile devices, laptops, everything else that you can potentially be using. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Officer at Basketball Victoria, joined by the High Performance Coach for the Victoria Country Women, Zoe Carr. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
No problems at all. If you've managed to find us, you've probably done so via iTunes, Spotify, or any of the other podcast networks. If you're able to like, share, retweet, rate, review, and subscribe to the show, that would be appreciated to help grow the audience. Great interaction over the last couple of weeks via the Twitterverse using the hashtag TalkingSplit online. Just making sure that we try and reply to these people as they throw it in, which is kind of the hard part, and I keep forgetting, unfortunately, because I'm bad on Twitter. But I'm trying to get better. I am trying to get better. Hey, before we kick off, big thanks to everyone that jumped into the podcast last week. I know we gave a shout out to all those people that that sent through an audio recording, but fantastic to have so many people reach out from our listenership and contribute something, and hopefully there's a few podcast debuts in there, which is obviously a good thing, but hopefully it's also, given we don't have a season for anyone to really coach in at the moment, hopefully it's going to be helpful for a few other coaches to put some time into some PD.
Yeah, I think the amount of coaches that we got was just overwhelming, to be honest, and the amount of work that they're willing to put in and their willingness to share, which I think is a vision for this podcast, is to have coaches share more. And so the amount of recordings that were sent in and people willing to give up their time, and granted it might have only been a couple of minutes, but still to take that time to actually share with other people what they're doing to help themselves get better, I think is just fantastic.
And it's phenomenal insight into the world of amateur coaches, for lack of a better term, that this is the amount of work that goes in from people that are essentially volunteers. Like, there aren't too many people that send something in that are full-time paid coaches that are coaching at elite levels or anything like that. It is literally our grassroots coaches. And this is the amount of work they're putting in. They're constantly trying to learn. They're constantly trying to interact and talk with other people and find different ways of doing things as well. So it's a fantastic resource, hopefully, that the coaches can go away and use it and do what they want to do with. So given Victoria is now officially in the state of lockdown pretty much everywhere, so the country athletes got a couple of weeks of training in, which was nice, but they're now back to the online Zoom sessions as well for your athletes. Is that right?
Yeah, so bit of a bummer. Kids were back on court and coaches were back on court, and it was all a lot of fun and, you know, having everybody reconnect again, and it was fantastic. And then, yeah, the stage three is in effect now, so it's back to online and just thinking of some new and different ways to approach it.
Excellent. So it is difficult, of course, for everyone that we are all coaches. We do enjoy coaching, whether that be coaching other coaches or coaching athletes, whatever the case may be. It's difficult to have to go through and not do something that you love doing, I suppose, for lack of a better term. So today's podcast is a really important one from our end. We've brought in another guest, which seems to be the theme of the podcast of late, is to get other people to do your work for you, which is a massive gift from our end. But big thanks to Jared Hillier for jumping in to this week's podcast, and we'll kick off now. A returning guest for this week's show, and there aren't too many returning guests, in all honesty. That's usually their choice, not necessarily ours. We have our Casey Hub lead coach and Zero Step enthusiast, Jared Hillier. Welcome to the podcast again, Jared.
Thanks for having me back. It couldn't have been too bad the first time then.
Not at all. Not at all. Great reviews. How are things down on the coast at the minute?
Yeah, overcast. A little bit of sun sneaking through at the moment, so I'm sitting out the back to do this pod, soaking up what little bit of sun we can get.
It's few and far between where we are, I assure you.
Yeah.
How's homeschooling gone with your two cherubs? Are they passing or failing the Hillier curriculum at the minute?
Toss a coin. No, I think we're going all right. I'm pretty fortunate that I've got two kids that are, well, I actually got three kids, but two that are in school. The two boys, they're pretty keen on their schooling. It's just got to check every now and again at the iPads on their Zoom lesson, not on Roblox or some other game. But if I seem tapping away too quick, I know they've gone onto a game. But no, we're managing. We're getting through it.
That sounds, I mean, everyone's going through that at the minute. It's if they're not doing Zoom training sessions, they're doing Zoom school sessions. Mm. It's a different world for anyone at the moment. So for those of you that may not be aware, when he's not using fancy words to describe the Zero Step, Jared does do some work with a not-for-profit organisation in the space of mental health in particular, and given everything that's going on at the moment, it's a really important space for a lot of our coaches. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of what exactly you do?
Yeah, so the simplest way to put it is I'm a buddy for some people that do have some mental health plans in place. Like these are people that have already gone through and been assessed and have what we call an action plan in place. So they've got some strategies to cope with whatever stream of mental health issues they have. And I'm someone that they can ring to, sometimes just a chat, but yeah, really just to someone to keep in contact with. They're having a bit of a tough time, they can ring me up. I touch base with them if I haven't heard from them for a while. So it's really, I'm essentially another resource for them to use outside of their clinical sessions that they may have, or formal sessions they may have.
Awesome. So for those that are potentially unaware, like mental health plans, you can get those through your GP. They're fairly easy, free counselling sessions and welfare sessions and the like as well. So if there are people out there that are struggling, there is a resource there that potentially people can use.
Oh, absolutely. I have a look. The last 5 or so years, as the mental health space has just grown resource-wise immensely. There's so many resources out there now for all different sorts of lifestyles to, you know, to fit your needs as well. The accessibility is getting more and more open. But yeah, you go through your GP, generally need a referral from your GP to then go and see a specialist. But yeah, that's a starting point. And most people have an action plan for their mental health.
Excellent. And it is something we don't want to, I suppose it's been shrouded in secrecy almost for a lot of years, that no one really wants to talk about it, and everyone wants to keep it really quiet and things like that. But I think it's actually a really healthy thing. The more we talk about these sorts of things, and in particular with everything going on at the moment, the more we can actually help people.
Yeah, look, I've always found it really interesting. I've got one of my older brothers, he's really into the mental health space himself. He's OCD. And has depression, that was diagnosed early on. So I've kind of grown up in the environment where mental health was spoken about pretty openly in our household. But I always found it really funny, like if you talk about physical fitness, we're all super happy to tell people what we're doing to get physically fit. Like it's just an open conversation and almost like a bit of a, this is what I'm doing, what are you doing? Mm. But as soon as you talk about, well, what I would call mental fitness and what are you doing to mentally prepare or strengthen yourself, everyone goes quiet. No one, like you talk about something like, oh, I do breathing exercises, and everyone's like, oh, that's a bit, you know, do you climb a mountain to do that at the top of the mountain, or the conversation just stops. So, you know, I see that the mental conditioning, you know, equal to, if not greater than, our physical conditioning and health.
That's usually because it's harder to put on Instagram, I find, like the mental health. Like it's easy to take a selfie at the gym. Like that's an easy one.
I work on it. Yeah. I work on it.
Like I'm led to believe it's easy to take a selfie at the gym, having not visited one for a very long time now.
We've been told.
So how did you start to come into this space? Like what is, obviously you grew up with it, as you say, but how did you become into this role that you're working, or not working with, but helping and supporting in at the moment?
Yeah, so I joined the Australian Defence Force, Army, when I was young, mid-teens, spent 9.5 years in the Army. I deployed a couple of times around the world, different parts. Yeah, I got to about my mid-20s. I'd met my now wife, and we were just starting to talk about, you know, starting a family and all that sort of stuff. And we didn't really want to start a family while still overseas and toing and froing and traveling around. So, yeah, we spoke about me getting out, discharging, and becoming a civilian as such. So, yeah, look, I'll put my discharge papers in, and when you're leaving the Defence Force, it's not necessarily 4 weeks and then you're at the door. Like, it, you know, for me it was nearly 5 months from when I put the paperwork in to when I left. And in a five-month period, you know, my anxiety, stress, slowly started to get heightened. over that period of time. And I kind of put it down to the fact that I was nervous about leaving essentially all I'd known, like, you know, from that, you know, 16 age group through to your 25, 26, you develop a lot of your, you know, your life skills and habits and your view on life. So all that was changing for me pretty quickly. So I put it down to that, got out, moved up to Darwin, where my wife's family's from. And, yeah, I was just relaxing for a few months. I wasn't keen to get into a job straight away. I hadn't really had a break for, well, really 9.5 years. So I thought I'll have 6 months off and see what I want to do. And, yeah, the stress and anxiety just kept getting more and more. Things like just getting really worked up for common things that you wouldn't normally get worked up about, like just waiting in shopping queues at the supermarket, or someone to complain about something that I just thought was just, you know, it's just a run-of-the-mill whatever factor in life. Like, why would you even mention it, let alone complain about it? So I was struggling, I think, to fit back into civilian life or society without having such a structured routine and a very direct, I guess, or we had very direct dialogue with your peers and stuff in the area that I was working in. So there was a little bit of settling back in, but the stress and anxiety just kept getting more and more. And we moved back down to Victoria. I moved back down to Victoria, and my wife had 3 months to finish off on a work contract. So I moved back down to the peninsula where my parents were living at the time. And it just kept getting worse and worse. Like I was waking up a couple of nights a week, like panic attacks and all those sorts of things. So I gave one of my friends a buzz that was in the army with me and got out a year or two beforehand that I knew had PTSD. So I just gave him a buzz and was just chatting away. And I found that like a lot of his symptoms or early signs were like exactly what I was going through. So I'm like, oh, no, surely I can't have PTSD. Like, I'm 26 and I'm fine. Like, there's nothing that really worries me. So I let it go for another month and eventually had like a pretty big blow up with my parents because I was still living with them waiting for my wife to come down. So, yeah, they're pretty direct and said, look, you need to go and speak to someone, not just your mate, like go and actually speak to someone. So I did, made a call, and they directed me down to the GP, got a referral, went and saw a specialist, and yeah, it started from there, had an assessment, and then it was diagnosed with PTSD. And really from there, put an action plan in place, which was like the help start pretty much immediately. Like, once you speak to someone that specialised in that area, you know, as you'd like to think, you know, they can start to help immediately. So I went through that, you know, I still now, like 11 years later, still follow that action plan because it's not all smooth sailing. Once you're out, you have your moments here and there, and I still follow that action plan and still check back in every 6 months just to make sure I'm on top of it. But then got involved through the buddy system through my own checkups. Found there was a few groups that looked after, you know, ex-defence people or people in your area, and it's something that interests me, connecting with others and helping them. So, yeah, I got involved via my own situation, and here we are today still doing it.
Was it at all daunting, like, making that first sort of reach out? Like, I suppose everyone has a little bit of a layer of sort of hesitancy and reluctance that I'm not too sure how this is going to be received, but did you go through that as well?
Yeah, it was interesting because when I first started to notice that I wasn't able to settle down over night time, like my mind was just constantly ticking over, and I was waking up most mornings fatigued, mentally fatigued, because the brain just kept ticking over all night. And some nights if you wake up having a panic attack or like a PTSD episode, it's fatiguing the next day, and then you start the next day in a really grumpy mood. And I was just trying to fight through it. I thought, oh, yeah, you'll be right. Like, you're not going to tell people that you're struggling to sleep. And I mean, by that stage, I was 27. I'm like, you know, just go for a walk and you'll be fine. But actually making that phone call, I don't know why I thought it was such a big deal. I think it's, you know, probably a sense of lowering your guard and letting people know that you're not okay. But it was complete opposite to what I thought it would be. Like, as soon as you made the phone call, that was just like one big weight taken off your shoulders. It was like, I should have done this 6 months ago. I would have saved myself a lot of sleepless nights and a lot of worry and a lot of heartache on the family as well, because it was pretty narky throughout that 6 month period being back home. And, you know, it's never nice to have a blow up with your family, but they're trying to do what they believe is right and you're trying to do what you think is right. But both the rights were clashing. So something had to change. But I think it is tough making that first phone call and then speaking to your friends and family afterwards, like actually saying, yeah, I do have PTSD. And it's a bit of a step, but I've had nothing but support the whole way through. Like, I haven't had one negative encounter through speaking about PTSD or my situation at all.
That's phenomenal.
I've got a bit of a long-winded question here, G, so bear with
me. Fire away.
I don't really have a sentence.
No pun intended. Fire away.
Let's see what we got.
So often as coaches, we take responsibility for checking in on the mental health of our athletes, especially in a time like this, and making sure that they're okay and they've got everything they need. And sometimes that can become a bit draining on the coach, you know, if you're absorbing a lot of people's, not problems as such, but, you know, the things that their thoughts and their feelings and the things that they're going through can eventually begin to wane on you. And then as coaches, because we feel like we should be, you know, the leader and up and in charge and all those sort of things, we then don't feel like we should pass that on to anybody else to help take that, you know, give that energy back. So obviously speaking out is the most of, and reaching out to someone is the most obvious answer. But sometimes to some people, reaching out to somebody and it, you know, being brave enough like you were to admit, hey, I need to talk to somebody here, is almost like telling an athlete who can't do a right-hand layup that they need to do a pro hop and finish on their opposite hand. Like, there's some steps in between. What are some, I guess, strategies that coaches could potentially do if they're feeling that, you know, I'm taking in all this information and all these, you know, feelings and things, which is great for the athletes. How do they then, if they're not at a point where they're ready to reach out and speak to somebody, are there any strategies that they can then lighten the load for themselves?
Yeah, like I do feel as though for me, writing things down certainly helped. Like I needed to figure out, one, what were triggers, and that's a whole other sort of topic, but you know, what was triggering me, what thoughts were hanging around longer than what they probably should. So for coaching wise, for me, it's very much how I process, very much my army experience helped with coaching. But you know, going home and being frustrated after a training session is, it probably happens more often than not as a coach, you know. Every now and again we have one of those sessions where we go home and high five the fridge and we've achieved everything and we're happy with life. But when those emotions are still there the next morning and you know, when they're reoccurring more often than not, I think that's when you probably need to start to look at things as well, like why are they still hanging around? What can I do? Now, what I felt was helpful is I wrote down some of the challenges I was having. Okay, now, you know, you can review that weekly or you can review it monthly. It's up to you. But if there's common themes in there, they need to be addressed. Okay, why are they continually popping up? Now, it may be that it's just a very tough situation with a certain parent, and it might not actually be your issue as such. You know, it might be a tough, it's just a really tough parent you're dealing with. You know, can you address that with your director of coaching and go through and say, hey, I've had multiple, you know, oh, I guess instances here based around the same parent. You know, it's continually festering away with me. How can we address it from a club side of things? Because it may be that the director of coaching may need to have a chat or whatever. But brought down, like I had writing as one of my, I guess, strategies. And it's not a huge, I wasn't writing a journal every night. They're just dot points, just the date, dot point, what the emotions were at the time and what the situation was. And if you start to see those common things, it probably needs to be addressed so you can move on. Look, if you don't have someone, like, you know, speaking to coaching friends or a mentor as well, like, you know, I know I've got a couple of mentors that I'll speak to and also then mentor a couple other coaches. And sometimes ringing someone and explaining a situation and finding out it's a completely normal thing to have happen, you go, okay, no worries. Right. So you go through that as well. That's a bit of a normal thing. But they might also turn around and say, look, you know, it might be a mentor that's been coaching for 30 years and say, hey, that's pretty abnormal to have that continually happen to you. You might want to address it with whatever your next up level is, whether it be a director of coaching or reaching out slightly higher. But that's how I went about it. I'll write things down. And now I just use notes on my phone, you know, just helping to save the forest. So I just use notes on my phone and jot things down. But that's really helped me track my emotions and what those emotions were centered around.
Yeah. And that might even assist with, you know, you've got it there in black and white or whatever color your notes are on your phone, G. But also
you change the color. I didn't know you just change the colors.
But you look at it and think, oh, actually, there's by actually looking at it and seeing it right in front of you, that may be then something that helps you say, hey, I do actually need to reach out to someone. This isn't, you know, fly by night, I'll get over it type thing. It's yeah. Consistent over the week or the month or whatever it might be. And hopefully that would then be the thing that makes people take that next step if they need it. So
yeah, it's tough. We're all in different circumstances. Like you might leave your training session and something's happened and you're emotionally built up, but then you walk through the door and you've got your kids running at you and your wife or your husband's asking you something. And all of a sudden it sort of gets put on the back burner until you settle down again at night, then it festers back up again. So I think writing it down gives you something to refer back to as well. And it kind of helps you not forget it. Yep. It's like, okay, hang on, this has happened a few times. I probably need to address this now. Yep. Or I can't cope with this. I now need to reach out, make a call and get assistance.
And it's no different, I suppose, to like a post-game review. Like we've all done it on a Friday night where you write down, this is what we were really good at. This is what we struggle with. When we play this team next time, these are the things I need to prepare for coming up. So, and you get a little bit of a guide as to, okay, this is our style now. These are our tendencies. This is this sort of, and we all have processes we go through. Like I know on a Friday night after a game, it used to really impact my weekend. If we played poorly or if we played well, like on the Friday night, I would still be sulking on the Saturday or up and about on the Saturday.
I can attest to this.
Yeah, until it was, thank you, until it was put to bed on the Sunday morning when we trained again. And it was almost like, I can't let this go until I've had a chance to rectify it in a lot of ways. That was kind of like a process. And then, you know, we've all been that, geez, it's 11:30, 12 o'clock. Probably go a large pizza because I'm feeling a little disappointed with my team at the moment. And all of a sudden, you know, you're two large pizzas in.
Yeah. Look, I find it fascinating with coaches that if you hit up most coaches and say, look, what's your game day preparation? What's your warm-up routine? What's your game plan? What's your post-game review like? They're just going to hit you with all the structures and systems they've got in place, and it works like a military operation. They got that so down pat. Then if you turn around and say to someone, okay, what about physically? How do you prepare each day? And, you know, how do you physically look after yourself? They may give you, you know, some people are obviously a lot more into fitness than others, but they'll smash out some things. Then you ask them, okay, how do you mentally and emotionally prepare yourself each day? Can you write that down? There's just crickets most of the time. It's like, well, hang on, why would I need to do that? And it's like, okay, well, how would you go if you took the same approach to your mental well-being as you do with your game coaching? Because if we put a tenth of the time into our mental well-being, I think it would really surprise people, like the benefits that you could have by just devoting a little bit more time towards it. But it's just funny what we prioritize and then how hard it is sometimes to write down, one, what your emotions are, and two, do you have a bit of a mental health plan, your own?
and putting it into a basketball sense, you know, we make better decisions when we're emotionally calm, stable, and those kinds of things. If we're carrying around like stress, anxiety, depression, potentially any of those sorts of things, and we then go and try and coach a game, our emotions are heightened. They're going to come out even more. You're going to be that irate coach that we've all seen at various stages. You know, I've been that coach at times. There's no question.
I was that coach last year. Yeah. Like last season with the Knox girls. And, you know, we had a great team. We'd been having a great season. And then personally had some things come up that really rocked me. And I took that into a game. And it was possibly the worst game I think I've ever coached. It come close. There's probably some people that are have some opinions on that.
Happy to give you a top 10.
But it was a it was tough. I was mentally exhausted, physically exhausted. I was a step behind the play on everything. Quick to jump to anger on things, and just I did not. I was unable to put the team in a position. They ended up winning, but they ended up winning. I had nothing to do with it. If anything, I was a hindrance to them in that game, to the point where afterwards when I got home and was doing what we do for basketball, not for ourselves, when I was going through the game and reflecting, and, you know, I sent a message out to them all just apologizing, saying, you know, I let these personal things, you know, overwhelm me and it won't happen again and blah, blah, blah. Now, the girls were great, like fantastic. But I just wonder if I had, similar to what you're saying, a routine of how am I going to approach just even the day. So then when things – because things are tough, times are tougher sometimes than others. Like look at us now. We're sitting in a lockdown where this time last year, you know, we were preparing to – you know, head into finals. Like it was a great time, you know. So
some of us were preparing to head into finals. Yeah. Others were.
But it's, you know, it's a thing. You know, sometimes they're going to be tougher. But if you have that routine of how you're going to look after yourself mentally, then those times may not overwhelm you as much as it overwhelmed me at that time.
Yeah. I think along similar lines, it was a couple of years ago, we had the under 18 country girls that ended up winning the national championship. I was lucky enough to have Sharon Denham as my assistant coach, as I call her, the Swan Hill Flyer. and it was just great what she provided me in the sense of calmness, relax, you can't control everything. Tapped me on the leg during the game when I was starting to get carried away and let that one go. You know, don't worry about that. It was just a real sense of calmness. And really what we got out of that end of that week was we as coaches needed to provide the players the blueprint of what they needed to do or guidance, and the rest was just removing hurdles. And some of those hurdles were the coaches. Get out of the way. You've got a team of very talented athletes. Give them some guidance and some advice and then stay out of the way. Jump in when there's a real red light or there's a real obvious moment. But other than that, let them play, be calm. And that's what, you know, Sharon, for me, the year and the year after as well, when she was my assistant again, really changed the way I viewed a game. So walking and yelling, not so much for the last couple of years. There's a hilarious photo someone took in one of our VJBL games. The whole bench is up and cheering, and I'm just sitting there staring at the court. It almost looks like I don't want to be there, but it's not that at all. I was actually really happy, but it was kind of that rub off from Jenna's, like, just be calm, focus on the game, focus on what's important right now. It's just different. It changes your coaching. And I think in turn then helps the players as well.
Yeah. We joke about it a lot, I suppose, as coaches that have been to a national championships where you finish on the Saturday night, you travel home on the Sunday, then you wake up Monday and that post-nationals depression kicks in. It's like, damn, I've just lived a different life for an entire week. I have no idea what's going on in the world. I haven't picked up a newspaper or watched news or anything like that. I don't know what's going on. And it's that real sense of you're missing what you had, like with your team. And there's probably a lot of coaches at the moment going through that because they've potentially prepared for an NBL 1, Big V, VJBL season, and now they don't have that there. And they're also feeling that sense of loss almost. Are there any strategies that you've used to sort of steady yourself again with that?
Yeah, look, I do compare it to being sent overseas for a 6 or 7 month deployment with the Army. You go overseas and all your senses are heightened for a period of time because you're off doing what you're being told to do, and then you come home and you get leave and you come back to normal civilian life and there's just nothing happening. None of your mates have changed. Your neighbourhood hasn't changed. Everyone's still doing the same thing. You're back buzzing as if you just had an experience of a lifetime and everything else is just real mellow. And you're like, I'd rather be back overseas. And I was like, really? What do you mean? I said, I'd much prefer to be back overseas. It's a real downer emotionally. But what I learned to do over time with guidance from friends is that as soon as that bit of a downtime happens, that's me time. It's time for you to start looking after yourself because you've just spent so much energy at the Nationals. Sleep probably isn't quality. You definitely haven't looked after your body. So you're running on the smell of an oily rag. Then you finally get home. That's me time. Okay, how do I emotionally declutter, pretty much level yourself back out to the normal daily cycle that you're in? It might be back off some of your basketball stuff for a couple of days and just spend a bit of time reacquainting yourself with a family or, touching base with mates you haven't spoken to for a while. That's what I started to do coming back from overseas, and then that's what I continue to do coming back from a Nationals with basketball. Right now it's a really challenging space because, again, we've gone from, depending on how long you've been involved in basketball, you've never had a break. Unless you had a season off of not coaching, but it's just come to a grinding halt. Then there was a bit of a jump start. We got back in, there was back to stop again. So for me right now, it's all about bettering myself. I've changed my routine. Like, I think routine is something that is really important, especially if you're struggling at the moment with not having that basketball, is readjust your routine, because you're so used to having your two training sessions a week and then your Friday night game. And look, you may be involved in multiple teams, so you've got all these sessions that were just always there. And your life was really, other than work, was based around your basketball commitments. I've just shifted them now and put a pretty structured routine in. Having kids makes it a little bit more difficult because, then you throw homeschooling and the odd tantrum in there and, the bit of the unknown with work for a lot of people as well, because some people, they've been severely impacted with work. So there's just such a wide range of circumstances around the basketball community at the moment. But the one thing I can encourage people to do is put aside me time. And I know it sounds a little bit, touchy-feely, but for me, I get up early every morning before anyone else does in the household. I'm not saying everyone has to get up this time, but I'm up at 4:30 every morning. So from 4:30 to 5, I'm just doing breathing exercise or meditation, if you like to use that word. As soon as it's 5 a.m., go out, walk. Like, I'm not doing strenuous exercise as such, but it's just my time to get out, fresh air. I'll get back by 6 o'clock, then the wife will probably head out, do her exercise, but then I'll read for an hour. So, I've got up, I've got some breathing exercise in, I've got my actual physical exercise in, and I've read for at least 1 hour. Then whatever happens for the rest of the day, I'm okay, because at least I've got my stuff that looks after me done, and nothing else during the day will interfere with that. So I think allocating some time for you and what you personally want to achieve is really important. And I'd encourage people to do it at a time where it's bulletproof. It can't be interfered with. So if you're going to do it from midday to 3 p.m., anything can happen during there. Work sends you an email, or mum gives you a buzz and just ties you down for an hour having a chat, and all of a sudden your day is thrown out. But that's what I've decided to do in the morning, because no one else is awake. Like this morning, I think I saw a fox and that was it. Didn't see a car, didn't see another human. But I think having a bit of a routine would help. And you're going to have to adjust your routine because basketball's not in there at the moment. So reassess. Also sit down and think of some areas that you want to get better at. One of my main ones is making sure I exercise for at least 60 minutes a day and read for at least 2 hours a day because they're two things I want to improve on. So I've put things in place that help me get that done.
I think I speak on behalf of your family where they're grateful you don't get up and play the bugle or anything like that first thing in the morning and just wake everyone
up. I'm one of those old alarm clocks when that thing goes off, mate. The neighbourhood wakes.
So with you say you're a buddy with this not-for-profit organisation and you're checking in on people and things like that. So what's the best strategy if you are, say, checking in with a player of yours and you can sense there's an issue but they're guarded and they're continually, no, I'm fine, but you can really tell they're not themselves and they're struggling but they're not quite ready to, I guess, open themselves up to you yet? What is the strategy, I guess, for that to ensure that you're doing the right thing by the athlete, but also, you know, because obviously I know myself, if someone asks me the same question too many times, I start to get annoyed. Yep. So, you know, are there any sort of tips or got me back. Are there any tips or strategies or anything that coaches could potentially use if they're going through this at this time?
Yeah, so what I've done in the past is having chats with the players, if you do sense something, and most of us know our players reasonably well, but what we've got to understand is we're not experts. Okay, so there's so much we can do. We can be comforting, understanding. We can be someone to listen. But if we do have genuine concerns, if it's a junior player, my first thing to do is to then have a separate call with the parents and just say, hey, just touching base. I've spoken to, you know, Sally, and you know, she seems a little bit down at the moment. She's normally quite a chirpy kid, and we don't know what's going on at home. Mum might turn around and say, hey, yeah, she's really struggling at school. We're having some issues with that. Or they may just be able to give you some background information. Well, I guess what your part is just bring it to the attention of the parents to say, hey, look, I do feel that from a coaching point of view, she's a little bit down and out. I just thought I'd touch base with you and say, is there anything I can do? You know, offering help. Most of the parents, you know, will turn around and say, yeah, look, we've noticed that as well. We're on top of it, or, you know, we're about to seek further assistance. Or, you know, that happens most of the time. And very rarely we get a parent say, yeah, look, I didn't even notice that. But most parents will notice something. And if you bring it to light, yeah, just make it a friendly, you know, in a friendly way. You don't want to ring up and say, hey, I got on WebMD and it turns out your child, and you're like, no, well, hang on, mate. I think just a friendly conversation. Say, look, from a coaching point of view, I feel as though she's not herself or he's not himself. I just thought I'd bring it to your attention because, you know, I care. You know, like as coaches, we all care about our athletes. I think that'd be the first port of call, to touch base with the parents. Because ultimately, yeah, we are coaches, but parents are parents. Yeah, you know, it's their decision. You've done your part by bringing your concern to their attention. It's hard to then intervene from there. My experience is a very large majority of the time, parents are very good with it. They thank you for the concern. Most of the time, they're across it already. So it's a reasonably easy conversation to have, but just be friendly and I wouldn't go in quoting WebMD in your first couple sentences.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's something we do as coaches by nature is almost try and take on too much at times. And in this instance with athletes, you know, we can do what we can. We can let them know we're here for them. But at the end of the day, unless you are a doctor, we're not doctors and we're not qualified, the best we can do is then keep it in the hands of the parents. But then I guess the next question is, what if you're checking in on another coach, so an adult?
Yeah, look, we had the same with the buddy system. I might give one of them a buzz or they might give me a buzz and just through the conversation, I'm sensing that they're not quite the normal selves or, you know, they're struggling at that point in time. Now, I'm not, a clinical professional in this area, so it's my thing. It's like, hey, you know, I might be having a chat to Rob and say, hey, Rob, look, I just noticed the last couple of times I've spoken to you, just don't quite seem your normal chirpy self. You know, how are you going with things, mate? Like, some people may open up or some may not. You've got good relationships with the people saying, look, maybe a phone call is not a bad idea. You know, like, what's the worst that can happen? They might turn around and you might just feel better after having that phone call. But, you know, I'm just thinking, I'm here for you, mate. And I'm getting a bit of a sense that you're not quite your normal self at the moment. So, yeah, you know, if you thought about making a call, it's just a bit of an encouraging thing. Like, you can't turn around, you know, it's hard to turn around and say, like, you must make a call because, you know, I watched a couple episodes of such and such and you're exactly like the main character and this is what he's got. You're like, well, wait and settle down. So maybe just encouraging, hey, bud, you know, that there are resources out there. And now you can, I mean, you can have web chats on so many of the actual support services. You can text message in, like, it's not making one of those phone calls. You don't have to go put a flag up at front of your house to let people know you've made a phone call to check in on your mental health. Like, it's really, really easy to do. But I do think the more people talk about it and the more people share their stories, the less stigma that's attached to actually what's essentially is making a phone call for your own mental health.
That's where people's support networks really matters. I don't think anyone has ever got into coaching for themselves and their own adulation. It's always to give back to someone else and to try and help out as best they possibly can with other people. And that's where other people's coaching networks matters. Like, the ability to pick up the phone and just have a chat to someone. Like, if anyone ever rang me and said, geez, Rob, you sound chirpy, the next question should probably be, something's wrong. Like, what's going on? Like, why is he sounding this way? But you do notice the difference in people's behaviours. And in particular, moments like this where we're probably all missing the sport we love. Like, if you were to survey any coach, they would all be dying to be back on court with their athletes at the moment. So there's a sense of routine that's now being taken away from them in a lot of ways as well. So it's trying to build a bit of a connection with coaches, and even just talking not about basketball is so important to them. Like, having a relationship with people, like, you should be able to walk past one of your players, for example, and say, hey, what's going on? Like, how was school athletics carnival? And just have that conversation, because that's when you'll actually catch them off guard a little bit and they'll let go a little bit more. Like, I know we've joked about it before that the times I found out the most about our players was when I go on rebound before a game for them and they're doing form shooting, and you can just, the barriers come down. Like, that's, they're not even thinking, they're only focused on their shot, and all of a sudden they've given up a whole heap of information as well. But it's trying to find that relationship and network within that suits you as well.
Yeah, I think now too, with so much going on and the landscape changing so quickly, I think it's really important to maintain perspective. Like, it is a difficult time. It is a difficult time. And we're not on the court at the moment, but we will be back. Like, basketball hasn't gone for forever. And we're so fortunate to live in a country that has a first-class medical system. Like, unbelievable. Like, you have a look at the nurses and the doctors, the researchers, the scientists we've got, like, they're all working overtime to get on top of this and help us. So we're not in a third world country where it's, you know, you just don't have support networks. Yes, it's a bad situation, but yes, we do have the best people in the world in our country working on it to get us through it. So not to make light of it, because we get it a serious situation, but I think sometimes to maintain perspective, you know, just every now and again, just checking and go, okay, where is everything really at? Yeah, if you do the right things, you know, follow the guidelines, know that we've got great support services put in place, you know, basketball will return, and there are many things put in place to keep us safe, providing we all follow it and do our bit. I think the other bit too is the media consumption. You know, there is a lot of time at home. But if we're sitting at home watching every single media update and news conference and reading all the major newspapers, it's just negative, 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 negative. That's okay. My suggestion to people is find your one trusted media source. And that's not your uncle's mate on Facebook that she's cheap for a living, but all of a sudden has a theory on
how to... He's an epidemiologist now.
Yeah. All of a sudden, he's an expert. Find your trusted media source. Get your daily update, okay? And then you don't have to tune into everything. You will get a phone call or an email or a text message if it's important. You're not going to miss out on, you know, your last chance to go and stock up on toilet paper because you didn't watch the 6 o'clock update. Get your daily update and move on, because I do think we can, you know, get ourselves or snow ourselves under by over consuming media content.
Absolutely. I said to Rob this morning, I was on Twitter this morning, and there was an article from one of the news outlets basically saying that everything was about to get worse with the virus. We were going to get, you know, over 1,000 cases a day and this and that and the other. And then I scroll up, it might have even been like 3 tweets above it, and it's a different article from a different news outlet saying that the DHHS are saying that, you know, numbers will halve in the next week or so. And it's so instantly I'm annoyed because I don't know who to believe, and it just adds to everything else that's going on at the moment. So I think you're spot on. The consumption of media content at the moment, I don't think is helping anybody.
No, I think my suggestion would be go to the department websites and get their updates. Likewise with social media, I'm not an anti-social media person, but I have definitely trimmed the social media consumption. And, you know, there's only so many videos of Karens you can watch in one day, or so many just the random opinions that get put up. Like, you know, that's all content that your brain's got to process. And when there's a lot of it put in with all the other news that you put in there, sometimes it can get a little bit too much, and then we get a little bit disjointed with what's truth and what's just random social media stuff that's being thrown out there. So my thing is, like, I did it maybe about 12 months ago, like, just unfollowed everyone that was not really of value as such. So I'm still friends with them, but I just, their stuff doesn't pop up on my newsfeed. There's probably only a dozen people, and, you know, there's Basketball Victoria, Basketball Australia, and FIBA. Outside of that, there's not a lot that comes up on my newsfeed. Because for me, it was just about restricting, one, what I was actually trying to process. Because you end up getting agitated after stuff, you're like, why am I getting upset about something someone's posted that I don't really care about in the first place? Like, it's like, we're not really close friends, we're not really connected, but somehow what they've posted's upset the rest of my day. And let's be honest, there's a lot of rubbish on social media, so I wouldn't be relying on social media for my my news source at this point in time.
Hey, how much has being involved in the Army actually helped your coaching? Like, with your process and the like, what's the synergies between the two?
I think preparation is one of the biggest ones, like work ethic as well. Like, I was fortunate enough during my time with the Army to work under some really, really good leaders. And when I say tough, I'm not talking about John Rambo tough. I'm just talking about tough as in their consistency with support, making you better constantly. Like, I was really fortunate to meet some really good leaders. But that carrying over, like, I don't think I've ever really wavered with the amount of time I've dedicated to basketball to make sure I'm constantly getting better, but the athletes I work with are constantly getting better. But managing a heavy workload with still being able to spend time with your family and things like that. So I think the discipline mindset has been huge. I think being able to deal with adversity has really helped as well. But also I think help with dealing with people as well, like just speaking with people. Like, so much of our job is communication based. And you heard a million times, if you're a really poor communicator, it really hurts your coaching. But I think communication wise, and probably the biggest asset is having a voice that carries across multiple courts if you do have to raise your voice. You know, I learned to have my voice carry across a fair distance, which is really cool when you're coaching at MSAC with 75,000 games going on at one time.
Was there anything on the flip side of that that you had to adjust that, you know, would work in the Army and was a benefit, or, I guess, yes, a bonus, but then something that didn't quite fit in coaching.
Yeah, so it turns out you can't be that direct with people in your normal day-to-day happenings. That was one that, yeah, I adjusted pretty quick. It wasn't, I'd made that adjustment before I started coaching for the most part, but being really direct without any additional carrying on, like deliver a very direct message and that's it, just walk away. And people are, hang on, mate, you can't say that. Yeah, well, hang on, you wanted feedback, you got it. Now let's move on. That's not how it works, buddy. You got to massage it. So I'm a massager, no messaging. So there was that, a bit of that. And I'd never worked with a female. Never ever worked with a female until I started coaching females. So, yeah, I my first 2 years out, I coached boys, and then I got a girls' team, and I'd never worked or coached a female until then. So, you know, that was a little bit different, but had a great, like an unbelievably good group of kids off the court that they got who I was. And I stuck with that group. That's, you know, like your Eliza West, Al Halsey, that group that come through. And by the time we got the under 18s, they were just pulling me up on things like, you can't say that. Maybe you should phrase it this way. Or, you know, they were really good about it, really mature, ahead of their time sort of kids. So that, they helped me a lot with my coaching. But, yeah, I think the directness was one of them. And then, you know, me probably understanding that kids can't be in there 5 mornings a week working out, then 3 afternoons and plus your games. I never saw an issue. I'm like, well, if you want to get better, well, we'll keep coming back in. Let's go to work. But I figured out that families have a life and kids also have to go to school.
Yeah, and workload doesn't really exist in the army, does it? It's you do what you're told, and that's it.
It's a little bit different. Although I see they're changing the ways. There's a lot. They're getting very modern, the Defence Force. I tell you, I keep up to date with it all, but it is very much a mindset of, especially in the combat calls. Like, you know, if you're tired and you're sore, push through, push on. Like it's never like, oh, don't show you're tired or you're sore or you're injured. Like, keep fighting on, keep pushing on. So there's that mentality that gets, not that anyone ever really says it to you, it's just in the culture when you join, it's like, well, I'm not going to put my hand up and say I'm sore and I can't walk any further. You just keep going until you fall apart. So you can't take the same approach with the athletes, but there's a lot that did transfer over. But I think there'd be far more that transferred over than didn't.
Has that made you a better leader, do you think, because of your time there? Like you read people better now and you've shown adaptability with it, and that's helped you deal with a lot of sort of stickier situations that you come across in coaching?
Yeah, look, I think one of the things that helps me is I don't get too worked up on things that are out of my control. Like I don't, you know, some things that people get really worked up on, I don't see as a big issue. I'm like, mate, just relax. The grand scheme of things, what's going on in the world, that's not a big issue. So I can emotionally dump that pretty quick. But I think being able to talk to people and definitely just walk into a stadium and talk to anyone, help lead where I can, I definitely think those things have helped. You know, mentoring others as well. You know, I'd like to think I'm accessible to as many coaches as possible to not really give advice, but just listen and chat away. So I do think the leadership side of things is ingrained in you, and especially after 9.5 years, you come out and you probably don't even notice some of the things you do because it's just all you've known. But it's just interesting every now and again when, you know, people make comment on things. Like I've never been afraid, even at first state appointment, to walk out in front of 150-odd kids and just all their parents in the stands and boom, just speak in public. I didn't even think about it. Like, I'm like, okay, well, off we go. Where some people, you know, like a couple of years later, I was working with other coaches and they were really nervous. And I didn't get it. I said, what are you nervous about? They're all 14, 15-year-old kids and the parents are up in the stands. You don't have to worry about too much. And they were jittery to address a big crowd of people. But I do think it's helped. And hopefully in turn it's helping others.
Absolutely. Is there any advice you'd have for coaches at the moment just to live the healthiest mental space they could potentially live at the moment?
Yeah, look, I think first and foremost, if you are not feeling yourself, reach out. Reach out. Like, it's there's no shame. There's nothing attached to it other than benefit once you make the, you know, a call. I mean, you got multiple resources online. You know, you got Lifeline, Beyond Blue. There's a whole heap of them with just so much resource ready to be thrown your way to help. So if you are struggling, by all means, reach out. But I would say things like, you know, getting a routine, right, setting some time aside for you, moderate your media intake at the moment, social media, you know, social media side of things, try and restrict it a little bit if you can. Like, I know it's easy at the moment just to sit on the phone and just flick through because it's a bit of a gap filler. You know, be mindful of how much you're drinking as well. Like, it's pretty easy at the moment to slip into a bottle of something and away you go every night because there's not a lot else happening to take that time away. But, you know, stay connected. We've all got family and friends, and we've all got someone that would take your call. Stay connected. We've got FaceTime. We've got Zoom. I mean, who wouldn't love another Zoom session in the day? But, you know, like, stay connected with your family and friends. And if you're okay, reach out to someone else. Okay, so we've got the, you know, times four sort of formula. There's me and I'm checking on four other people, and those four people checking on another four people, and the web grows. Right? You're checking on other people as well, but I think staying connected, you know, having chats, it doesn't have to be about basketball. We're at the point now where the last couple of months, the chats I'm having with my mates have got, they've actually got nothing to do with anything, but their chats, and we're staying engaged. But, you know, stay connected. Probably review your eating habits as well. Like, you know, we are home, so it is easy to make multiple trips to the fridge per hour. But, you know, you're getting your exercise in there. You know, you don't have to go on a diet per se. Like, just smart choices so you're not going too crazy with it. So stay, you know, physically active, looking after your food intake, and stay connected with people. And don't be afraid to reach out. Like, there should not be any, if there is any at all, stigma attached with asking for help. And it's a real interesting way of looking at when we are so happy to help athletes the second they ask for assistance. You know, sometimes we need to ask for assistance. It's no different. Picture yourself as an athlete needing help. You're a coach that's asking someone else for help. It's no different.
Yeah, I think it'd be wonderful if we could get to a place where, as a society, reaching out is no longer considered brave. You know,
yeah.
It's not brave. It is at the moment it's brave, but if we could get to a place where it's just the norm and it's considered nothing other than just somebody reaching out, that I think that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, look, I'm always open as well. Like, people want to come have a chat and you'd talk more in depth about my stuff, reach out. I got no issue with that at all. I think, like I mentioned earlier in the pod, there's been nothing other than benefit from making the initial phone call. Like, nothing has got worse. There's been some little rough patches here and there, as per everything else in our life, but the benefits have just been overwhelming. And the only regret I had is I didn't make the phone call 6 months earlier. That's the only regret I've got.
Makes perfect sense. Mate, thanks very much for jumping into the podcast and being so open and transparent with everything that you've spoken about today. It's a really, it shouldn't be an awkward topic, but sometimes can be an awkward topic for people to navigate. So really appreciate your time, and obviously appreciate your time in the Australian Defence Forces as well. It's huge, and the fact that you keep giving back and you're so open about this is really beneficial for a lot of coaches out there. So big thanks from our end.
Hey, no worries. I'll just last one, that, you know, if you are really struggling, Lifeline, 13, 11, 14.
Perfect. Mate, thanks so much.
For having us.
Thanks to Jared Helia for jumping in and sharing with us all his experiences in this space. And this is the thing, it's really easy to make sort of snap judgments on who people are when they haven't potentially spoken to them or know anything about their background or something like that. But I would hazard a guess that 99% of people in the coaching world didn't know Jared's background and some of the things he's been through and how he actually goes about helping other people as well.
Yeah, the work that he does with so many people is just He doesn't go around publicising it, and he probably should, because it's amazing work and it's something we can all learn from. And as I said in the pod, it'd be great if we could get to a point where, you know, speaking out when we need help and reaching out to people is not considered brave. It's just considered the norm, and it's how we operate in our day-to-day lives. And I think we're slowly getting there, you know, with all the more resources that are out there. But, you know, there is still that thought process at times of, I don't want to bother people, and we've got to take that away, whilst also, as Jared mentioned, keeping things in perspective too. So, you know, we don't need to reach out and, you know, seek advice when we stub our toe on something. But when we're having genuine issues or genuine concerns or feelings of anxiety, then it has to happen, and we have to start making it the norm.
And we understand why too. Like, this is a difficult time for a lot of people in a lot of different ways. And basketball plays a part in all of that, whether we are potentially full-time paid employees that work in the sport, or whether we're simply volunteer coaches or potentially even players. Like, this is difficult because we're not able to do the thing that we love. But I think the more we talk about it, the better we're going to get with this. And it is something that is really important to be a part of. And I love the rule of four that he spoke about there. Like, if I'm good, I'll ring four other people and make sure they're okay, who can then ring four other people and make sure they're okay. And I think that's a great way to go about a potential coaching fraternity and landscape, so to speak, that can really look out for each other.
Yeah, exactly. And you think about it with our athletes at the moment, something we noticed a lot in lockdown number one was a bit of a loss of identity. And that happens to our coaches too. If I'm not coaching, or if I don't have this team and I'm not contributing to their lives or their basketball journey or whatever else it might be that they take from coaching, it can cause issues with identity and who am I and what am I doing, and that can lead you down a very dangerous path. So, you know, having that, I guess, structure of, you know, helping each other and checking in, or if I need help, I reach out. But if I'm okay, I still reach out and I check in on someone else. I just thought was fantastic, and something that I think could easily be adopted into the coaching world.
No question at all. So I know we've thanked him plenty of times, but really do appreciate the honesty and the transparency that Jared spoke about. I think it's, I'll unfortunately jump on this, but I think it's really brave and courageous to be able to talk about these sorts of things with the view to help others. It's, you know, there's nothing self-serving about that whatsoever. That was, you know, and honestly, it was one text message, mate, any chance you can talk about this, done. No problems at all. Are you really willing to help out other coaches? So please do reach out if you do need help. And we'll put some links in the show notes as well with just some resources that you can potentially tap into as well, that if you are struggling or need a little bit of a boost every now and again, you can at least go and talk to someone.
Yeah.
As always, we'd love coaches to throw out on Twitter using the hashtag TalkingSplit in the comment section, just to try and build the coaching community as best we possibly can. So that would be fantastic. If there are any topics or anything you'd like to discuss with us, please reach out and we'll get researching, and we'll try and get as many bits of information out to our coaches that are going to be potentially of use to them as we possibly can. Thanks everyone for jumping into the podcast. Really appreciate your listen, your like, share, rate, review, subscribe, and whatever else I've left out on that. We will catch everyone next week.